On Pilot TV this week, we take advantage of James's lavish two-week break and Steph's equally lengthy holiday to stage a two-person Dot and Ethel-style coup in time for next week's 400th episode. We'll be following Gugu and Bartha Raw to Jamaica in Sky Now drama series Possession, checking in with John Hannah as he confirms Ben Adorma's murder on Five, and tracking The Lioness starring Zoe Saldana to Ukraine in season 3 of Tyler Sheridan's espionage thriller on Paramount+. And we welcome this week's very special guest, friend of the pod, Ricky Gervais, who's telling us all about his sweary animated Alley Cats on the Netflix. Hi, I'm Boyd Hilton, and this is your essential guide to every show that matters, and this particular week, some shows that might not. But without further ado, let's welcome my co-host, the queen of Q&As, fan of Vanda de Volk, Kay Ribeiro.
You're such... Oh, my God. Boydo, you're going to have to explain that. It sounds crazy.
Well...
It's a typo.
I mentioned it last week.
Yes. Behind my back.
Well, because in last week, in the coming up, also out section, you know, we do right at the end of the podcast every week, we've reviewed what we can review. We talk about what's embargoed and we'll get
to the end. I like you explaining the podcast I did for 3 years to me, but carry on.
Well, you were listening to the last podcast, so I need obviously to explain it partly to the listeners. Mm-hmm. Anyway, yeah, we did our normal podcast, did the review. So at the end, we do what else is on. And what else is on, Kay, is the new series of Vanda de Volk. And I have to explain that, well, I got you to preview that for us in Heat Magazine, God. And you brilliantly referred to him.
I kept on thinking about that after you pointed it out. It kept on making me laugh. Anyways, hello, Boydo. How are you?
Well, I'm okay, apart from I just had a coughing fit.
Which, I know, that was scary. Like, no, obviously, listeners, we're doing a remote record, and I could just see Boyd put himself on mute, and then slow motion was sort of what seemed like he was choking to death. I was a bit worried. Just communicating with Darren, just saying, don't know what to do right now.
Darren being the
our editor,
the hero who edits this utter nonsense. Yeah. I was also, when I did try and speak, I had that kind of croaky, high-pitched effect. Beloved of Harry Kane, of course, in the world's most legendary post-match interview ever.
Mm. So you're okay now.
I think so. I've got a little bit of a kind of throaty quality, but let's not waste too much time dealing with that, Kay. It's just the two of us this week. We should say apologies to everyone. We're not. There's no video on any of the Pilot TV podcasts this week because James isn't here. Steph will be with us for next week's podcast, by the way. It'll be the three of us. But this week, we're just the two of us. It's just too much to do it in the recording studio. So apologize. We will not be in vision. You just have to listen to our dulcet tones.
I think I think it would have been very traumatic for the listeners watching you choke. So actually, I think this is a blessing.
I think we probably would have edited that out.
But. You say that. I mean, that could have been a good clickbait. Is this the moment? Beloved TV reviewer cocks it. Yes, how have you been other than that, Boydo?
I've been absolutely fine, yes. Looking forward to going away on holiday myself. Everyone's going on holiday at the same time, Kay, except you.
I know, ridiculous. I'm the one here holding the fort.
You're literally holding the fort.
You should
be
nervous about that.
Yeah, you are not literally holding the fort. You are holding the fort, though. Without further ado, I've said that twice already. What have you been watching? Let's start this effing podcast, how we always start it. What have you been watching, Kay?
Right. First thing I've been watching is something that I think you will love, if you haven't watched it already, Boyd. Joe and David's magical sitcom tour, Fawlty Towers, right?
Yes.
It's on. Have you seen it?
No, but I've seen clips of the whole series, yeah.
Okay. So this is on You and Gold, and this particular episode, which is episode 2, is on the 11th of August. And basically, Joe Wilkinson and David Earl, comedians, best friends, are immersing themselves.
Who are both in Afterlife.
Yes.
Ricky Gervais' Afterlife. Yeah. Yep.
And in other of Ricky's projects. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fat friend of Ricky.
Yeah.
Are immersing themselves in their favourite sitcoms. And this episode, as the title suggests, Fawlty Towers, because David is obsessed. I keep on going to call him Dave. That's why I keep on pausing before I say it. David is a huge fan of Fawlty Towers, like us. And it's just brilliant. It's kind of got that kind of ramshackle energy about it because, you know, they're very loosey-goosey about the format. But Joe has organised some fantastic things for David to experience, including going to the BBC studio where it was filmed and talking to a member of the public who was watching it being recorded. They go to Devon, the site of Glen Eagles Hotel, which is what John Cleese based the character of Basil Fawlty on, the manager at the time there. They talk to a chambermaid who worked there and actually worked with that manager. It is so good. And then David and Joe get to talk to John Cleese himself, and David is beside himself. He's so excited, but plays it cool. So yeah, I have to say, if you're a fan of Fawlty Towers, do check it out. That's on New and Gold.
So the series, it's three episodes in the series, and the idea is that, the two of them, they take turns in planning an elaborate series of visits and events and chats, etc., with the people involved. And the first one is Porridge, which I think goes out this week. Then Fawlty Towers next week. And then the one after that is The Office, Ricky's involved with. Yeah. So, it's a brilliant, it's a great idea. And those two are fantastic. And Dave Earle to you. He voices one of the cats in Alley Cats, of course.
Oh, right.
And he is the rudest, but he has all the really, really rude lines in the show. Yes, he gets to swear the most and says perverse things.
But that's his role in all of Ricky's shows, right? Derek, I always remember him from Derek just being completely obscene.
Yeah, they're all in Derek. Yeah, that's right. Excellent. Yes.
So I watched that. Wales.
Yeah.
I've watched, I finished watching not very pilot show, Katie Price, Nothing to Hide. I don't know if you've seen any of that, Boyd.
I've seen almost all of it, actually. Yeah, enough.
I finished watching it the other day. And for people like us who work in the industry, obviously we know a lot of the stuff you kind of think, is there anything that Katie's got left to say? Because she's kind of laid it all bare. But I found the series fascinating because there was stuff I didn't know. And we heard from people in her life who, I hadn't heard from before. Gareth Gates. I mean, we've heard from him talking about that relationship they had, but just to him now, all those years on, and to discover certain elements of the story that he didn't realise, particularly he thought she had set something up, etc. But I think what I found most devastating is in this third episode that I recently watched is hearing from her two kids, Prince and Junior, talking about the aftermath sort of her breakdown after her husband, Kieran Haler, cheated on her. And she sort of like just went off the rails, drugs, she tried to take her life, etc. And it is so horrifying just hearing them talk about it. And obviously, they were deeply impacted by it and traumatized. And yeah, I think hearing them talk about it just really sort of brought it home. Because I think it's easy sometimes with someone like Katie Price, she's a really complex character. She has been through a lot of trauma, but she also plays up to the media, and sometimes she can become a bit of a pantomime character. And then I think this was very sobering, the reality of it, which is that she is a mum of however many, and they are really affected by what happened. So, yes, that was interesting.
They've got their own show as well, though, haven't they?
I think Princess Diaries.
So do it together.
And then lastly, just as a kind of palate cleanser, if you like, after that, I revisited Home on channel4.com.
Rufus Jones, the comedy drama, friend of the pod, Rufus.
I honestly don't know what made me do it, but I was in the mood. I needed something heartwarming, funny. For me, it's similar to Mum in that way. It's like a comfort watch, and I hadn't watched it in ages, and I found it on 4.com. And it's brilliant. So if anyone hasn't seen it, it's Syrian refugee Sammy, played by Youssef, is it Kirkor? I don't know how to say it. I think that's his name, who ends up staying with a family. There's a mum played by Rebecca Staten, boyfriend is played by Rufus, and the son played by Oakley Pentagast. And it's just so funny and heartwarming and pure joy. So if you need some joy in your life, I would highly recommend it. Sadly, only two series, which I find
it was a shame.
Bit devastating,
but it's a bit like Android, but better. Yeah,
Boyd.
Sorry, Kay and I had, shall we say, a mature and reasoned discussion. I thought on Pilot Plus,
I was quite.
If you haven't subscribed to Pilot Plus yet, by the way, listeners, just do it. It's like 10p a year or something. I don't know. But we discussed how, because we on the regular pod, when we reviewed Android, and this, including Steph, I mean, James, we know, doesn't understand comedy, and we never take anything he says about comedy seriously. But Steph is, you know, has good taste-ish, you know, when it comes to comedy, I'd say.
She does have good taste. Yeah,
you know. We'll
across the board.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that. We weren't hugely enamored of Android, unlike you, who you love it.
Yeah, well, I'm in big lender's pocket, as I pointed out on
Pilot Plus. Oh, yeah, you hosted the Q&A.
I did host it, so, you know, I am biased. Yeah. But I gave a good defence of it on Pilot Plus because I think that you're being a little harsh. I take your points about episode one not getting into quick enough and the other things you said. But I think if you continued, I think there's a lot of joy to be had. It's very amusing and their relationship is very sweet and it's poignant too.
But I take all that on board. But you bringing up Home is really interesting because Home has a similar tone, right? I mean, obviously, hasn't got a robot in the middle of it.
But it's
funny. It's sharply funny, I would say, from the word go. And, you know, incorporating, it has a lot of stuff to say about migration and migrants and, in quotes, asylum seekers and all that. But it never stops being funny all the way through. Anyway. I don't know why I've dragged
so
up
minute,
that whole...
Yeah, somehow you just wanted to kick the boot in again. Stick the boot in.
kick the boot in. Well, I just wanted to, provocatively bring out that subject.
We've agreed to disagree on this, but I would recommend it to everyone else. Like, if you just want an enjoyable comedy, fun characters, I think Diane Morgan is a genius, as is Sarah Kendall, who, you know, wrote it with her and stars in it. And yeah, the relationship between Linda and Sue is brilliant. And it just gets better and better as the episodes go on. And it's really heartwarming.
So the final thing I was going to say was, in my, what have I been watching? I watched another episode. I watched episode 3. So, after our disagreement. So I wasn't just randomly putting the boot in.
Kicking
the boot in. and it is better. I think episode 3 is the best one so far. And there's only 6.
Can you continue? Can you finish watching it then?
I'll try to finish watching it, yeah.
But good.
I get it. It's by tomorrow. Okay, fine. So Home, yes, very good. And anything else?
No, I'm saving the rest for our record tomorrow because, you know, I don't want to fill you up with all the treats now. And some of them are true crime, so I think Steph will enjoy hearing about them.
Please God, don't fill them up. Yeah, whatever you do. Were you watching by any chance Sunday Brunch on Sunday? Just gone.
No.
The Channel 4 3-hour. I watch Sunday. I'm a big fan of Sunday Brunch, so I watch it pretty much every.
You're always into these like morning show, like this morning you watch.
Yeah, I'm fascinated
religiously.
And by the way, funny you should mention that because Dermot and Alison are doing this whole week. This week, because it's like school holidays.
Kids' holidays, yeah.
Kids' holidays. And not only that, you know, ITV brought in this this money-saving scheme whereby during the holidays, the show would be 3.5 hours long. So they do it like, it goes on like 10 to 1.30. So there's no Loose Women. Instead of having Loose Women, usually they throw to Loose Women at 12.30.
How's that saving money?
Because it means they don't have a whole, you know, they don't have to pay the Loose Women. So every year there's a whole chunk of Loose Women's that there are fewer of them each year.
Oh God, I feel bad for this. I'm starting a campaign for Loose Women.
No. It was controversial. It's been controversial, and a lot of people complained about it, and they've cut a lot. Do you remember there was big hoo-ha when they announced cutbacks to the daily schedule on ITV. Yeah. So Good Morning Britain goes on longer, and anyway, bottom line is
funny how all the women are cut. Anyway, carry on.
No, because women hosting Good Morning Britain and Alison.
One woman. Anyway, carry on.
There's always...
I don't know what.
Anyway, no, you've gone off the rails now, I have to say. So, there's that. Alison and Dermot, 3.5 hours every day, joy. That's on in the background, obviously, of my work life. Mm-hmm. But on a Sunday morning, I do like to have Sunday Brunch on, which is live, right? The thing about Sunday Brunch is it's three hours... It's live, and they often get really good guests. Like,
really?
It's all about. So, on last Sunday's show, they had Stephen Mangan.
Oh, I love Stephen Mangan.
Yeah. Giles Brandreth, the man of legend, talking about who's always on this morning as well.
He always has a good knit. I mean, it's probably too hot for it, but.
No. And Frank Skinner, right? And Frank Skinner was very funny. He was sat next to Giles Brandreth. And he, because if you look, Frank Skinner has a podcast, which I also listen to, with Emily Dean. You remember when they used to, they used to be on Absolute Radio, and then Absolute Radio got rid of them.
Yeah.
And now they do a podcast together. And it's really funny. And on that podcast, Frank Skinner's often talked about Giles Brandreth and wondering whether he still wears a knit, even in this hot weather. And sure enough, he did have a knit on. And he brought it up and they discussed it, how he still wears
a jumper.
It must
have been a lighter knit, surely.
It was a lighter knit, I think.
Okay, fine.
But the amazing thing about this episode of the show, of Sunday Brunches, Stephen Mangan took over the hosting of Portrait of the Artist of the Year on Sky from Frank Skinner. Right? Do you remember? Remember in the, back in the day, Frank Skinner was the co-host of Portrait Artist of the
Year. I've sort of like wiped Frank from my memory, from my portrait memory. Yeah.
You're not the only one. So I knew this, right? As soon as I saw this line, I guess I thought, oh, that's, it could be awkward because I know that thing. And there are all these stories at the time on like Pop Bitch and stuff like that.
Oh, I love a bit of gossip from you
guys. And in the tabloids about how they had to get rid of Frank Skinner because he was really difficult during the filming of it. And you know, do you remember? It was quite a kind of public.
I've heard that before, just gently.
Yeah, we've probably heard it privately and publicly. Anyway, so this sits me thinking, you know, maybe it'll come up, you know, because Frank's the kind of guy. I love Frank Skinner. You know, I've kind of, you know, known him on and off for like 30 years.
Of course you have.
Yeah. I wrote a big interview with him for Heat once where the headline was, "Women over 40 are rough as old assholes." Right?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
And he complained. Listen to this. This is really funny. I've gone a lot of diversions here. I'll get to the point eventually. Don't worry. Anyway, he complained. Not in a horrible way. Just in a mild... He was like... He literally like... I think he called me up. And these are the days before... It was like mobile phones. I think he called me up at the office. So I have number.
On your landline.
And he said, oh, boy, thanks for the interview. I really enjoyed it, blah, blah, blah. But I think you've misquoted me. I didn't say women over 40 were rough as old assholes. I said women over 40 were rough as assholes, not old. So his complaint was, I put in the word old. And I was like, amazing.
Frank, no.
Yeah. Anyway, so we go that far back. And obviously, this is must have been like 30 years ago, 20 years ago or whatever. Anyway.
Just, I feel aggrieved, by the way, just to let you know.
Fair enough. Oh, my God. You'd never say that now, obviously.
Yeah.
Cut to last Sunday. He's there. And I knew this background to the Sky Arts Portrait Artist of the Year controversy. And sure enough, in the final segment of the show.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Tim, what's his name, who hosts it, brought up the subject. And I was like, whoa. Okay.
Do you know what?
Yeah, go
on. That's the classic thing of leaving it to the last few minutes.
I don't even know if it was that had that much thought about around it.
You say that. You don't, I mean, that feels like an intentional, let's drop this bomb a few minutes before the end.
Maybe. So Tim Lovejoy. Anyway, for whatever reason, he brought it up. And Frank, instead of like going, you know, as a normal like celebrity would go, it was fine, you know, blah, blah, blah. He went, yeah, apparently they got rid of me because everyone hated me.
Oh my God.
And I was like, oh my God. He was like, yeah, apparently I was really horrible to everyone. He said, but from my point of view, I thought they were horrible to me. And he just went on this whole, like, and he was like,
oh no.
And he quoted someone saying that, you know, he was getting involved in talking about the artworks, right? And someone, one of the producers or someone said to him, Frank, you're not one of the judges. You're just a presenter. And he was like, he told this story.
So he
drew the veil from this, like, showbiz, what I consider to be like a TV business insider bit of gossip. And he completely confirmed that it was not just gossip. It was true. And he did leave the show under a cloud. And then he cut to Stephen Mangan. And then he goes, so Stephen Mangan got my job, basically. And Stephen Mangan's going, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. You know, blah, blah,
blah.
What
did Stephen Mangan do?
He just kind of like, it was just, he kind of reveled in the awkwardness and made a joke of it because he's a really funny guy himself. And then, funnily enough, then Frank Skinner brought up the fact that his radio show was cancelled as well, which is by Absolute Radio. And he brought that up as well. He just talked about this litany of things he'd been cancelled from. And he's like, I think I'm an okay guy, but apparently everyone hates me. So, yeah.
Oh, my God. That feels a bit car crash. I can't.
If anyone is interested in any of these people, Frank Skinner, you know, et cetera, or Portrait Artist of the Year or Stephen Mangan or anything, you must catch the last segment. I would say it's on channel4.com.
How did Tim handle it?
Tim Lovejoy is like, people tend to put up Tim Lovejoy a lot for being, you know, but I credit him for asking them about it. And he kind of carried on asking about it. He didn't just stop, you know.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
it was hilarious. And they all end up being complete hysterics at the end of it. And in fact, they end the show, but they're all just laughing. And Frank said something else about Charles Brandon that was really funny as well. So the whole thing is hilarious, honestly.
Bloody hell.
So Sunday Brunch is one of my recommendations.
Sure.
For what I've been watching. And then the other show I need to mention is I have, after many months of not being able to watch HBO Max because of complicated reasons that I have delineated on this podcast.
It sounds fun.
I've got it all fixed. Oh, listeners were loving it. Fascinated they were. It was an explanation because James has been pressuring me for months on end about doing a spoiler special chat about The Pitt season 2, right? Which finished.
Oh, yeah.
I only finished a couple of weeks ago. I would say 3 or 4 weeks ago. I did actually finish. It was going out weekly on HBO Max anyway. It wasn't all available in one go. And I had this problem with my HBO Max subscription. Anyway, I've sorted it all out and I have finished.
Can you hear that? That's a collective sigh of relief from the listeners.
Yeah, and clearly you.
Yeah, because now it means you can do the Pitt
spoiler special. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. But more to the point, it just rammed home how unbelievably brilliant The Pitt is. It is, honestly, it's an incredible show. And I think season 2 is even better than season 1. And partly the reason for that is it's even more hectic, a hectic whirlwind than season 1, because they have this part of the story. It's also on the 4th of July. So, you know the format of The Pitt is 15 hours, 15 yeah. episodes, 50, each one is an episode. And now, as it plays out in real time, showing you what's going on in the emergency room where it's set. And in this season, yeah, it's all about Independence Day, and it's all about people getting injured by fireworks, people wanting to leave in time to watch the fireworks, blah, 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 blah. But it also ends up being the busiest time possible because other hospitals in the area in Pittsburgh decided to close for whatever reason.
Oh,
no. And they in the main hospital where it's set, where Noah Wiley's character works, who's the focus, obviously the lead character, all the computers go down due to a cyber threat. So they have to revert to analog, like writing things. Worst shift ever. So they really milk all the problems with it. But in such a brilliant way. I don't know. You watch the show and you're like, how did they do this? How do they physically, technically manage to show us 5 or 6 or 7 different patients being treated and the camera whirls from one to the other and they're being the vivid reality.
Wait, are you saying single camera?
Not entirely single camera, but there are a lot of sequences which are one shot going on for like a few minutes, at least as the camera whizzes from one patient to another. Not for the whole thing. That would be extraordinary, beyond extraordinary.
Yeah, impossible.
It's pretty extraordinary as it is. But yet each patient being stuff done to them that is, I mean, I'll mention one, right, just as an example of how daring the show is. One patient, this bloke, and we'll dive into this more. So I don't think this is a spoiler because it's just one of the cases that you've got. But people were complaining about, I'm mentioning him. Anyway, there's one patient, this bloke, who's taken Viagra and mixed it with something else and has an erection that won't go down. And they show you in vivid detail the offending erect penis. Because
not under a sheet.
Procedure,
it's not like one of those magic tricks.
No. They full on, and the cut is so funny. I think they're.
You don't want to be saying cut and penis, by the way.
Well, exactly, but they do have to cut.
Wow.
Yeah, it's grim. And,
oh my
but
god!
The sudden cut to the there it is. You're not going to just talk around the fact this guy's got a penis problem.
Don't
you're
beat show around us, the bush or the penis.
You are going to show us this thing in all its in quotes glory. And that they so yeah, it's no holds barred, Kate. And
do you know what? I've been so like full disclosure. I was absolutely desperate to see it, and then I spent a prolonged amount of time in hospital with a loved one. And so I said to Boyd, I haven't even watched the first series, and I'm so annoyed because you were asking me, have you seen it? Let's talk about it. I was like, I will in the next few months. It's just
I mean, fair enough. You should build in. Yeah, what's the phrase? Trigger warning. Yeah, it's you need to have a good period of time where hospitals aren't, you know, utmost in your mind, shall we say. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
but I will watch it because I've been desperate to for, you know, for the longest time.
Yeah. So the cases are incredible. There's stuff like there's a baby. There's a kind of an abandoned baby storyline. Mm. And it's really sweet. And they kind of all have goes. There's a bit where Noah Wiley, right, picks up this baby and kind of like sings to it. And the expressions on this baby's face are like, how did they do it? And it doesn't look like CGI. It's completely real, this baby. But the baby is responding, you know, facially to what Noah Wiley is saying.
That would have taken forever, I'm sure.
Oh, like, my God. You're like, how the fuck did they do this? But it's so addictive. This is the thing. It's so addictive. And somehow, even through the harshest, most difficult patients they show you, like death, you know, et cetera, is addressed. But it's so addictive. It's so well done that you kind of can't stop carrying on watching it. It's incredible. I just wanted to say that it was a pleasure. I loved watching 8 hours of it pretty much all in one go. And by the way, I think it's the best way it's consumed because obviously it goes out weekly on HBO Max here and in America. If you can somehow save it up, because I also binge watched season one when I was on a flight to LA and back. If something about binging on it is so incredibly pleasurable, that I would recommend.
Yeah, I'm actually excited to do that and not have to wait.
So there, The Pit and Sunday Brunch. That's what I've been watching, Kay.
What a combo.
And I think now, you know what now the time is? It's time for the listener question.
Yes, which, okay, so on Pilot Plus, we started to, well, I flagged a question to Boyd and he said he would answer it on the main pod because he felt like enough people have probably taken the piss out of him about it and would want to know the answer maybe. And this is all about the fact that, as all long-time listeners know, every time Boyd talks about a film, he says it is one of his favourite films of all time. And we, James and I and Steph point out it's absolutely ridiculous because how long is his top 10? Well, Gary got in touch and said, listen, having listened to the podcast for many years now, I've narrowed it down to approximately 1,000 movies. But if Boyd could come up with a top 10, it would be great. I get it. It's not a film podcast, but getting this list down on record is a holy grail moment for a lot of us. Thanks, Gary. Gary, 2 R's. So, Boydo.
I mean, the listeners have clamoured for it. you know, what can I say? James is away. Well, this is one of them. Not literally. This is one of the most. If the cat's away, the mice will play. He is the cat. Yeah. I'm the mouse. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to take up too much time of your precious.
No, just list them.
Well, I was just going to say quickly what they are, because some of them people might
not know. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. List.
Oh, right.
List
them. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Don't go into detail analysis because I'm going to expire.
Don't worry. Having just launched a 10-minute discussion of The Pit, I was going to say you'd be sick and tired of my voice by now, but I mean, you know, if you're subscribed to this podcast, then
let's face it. I've had it for 20 years as well. I mean, what's to be done?
That's what you're going
to
get. Yeah. Right. These are my top 10 films.
Okay, of all time, you can't go back on this now, and then going forward, you can't start banging on that this is in your top 10 film.
No,
if it's not. Okay,
number 10, Punch Drunk Love, which is Paul Thomas Anderson's masterpiece with Adam Sandler, and I saw this film. It's one of my greatest ever viewing experiences, so it's slightly skewed by that. I was in the Cannes Film Festival, covering it for Richard and Judy.
Oh my God! What? Who
didn't
are you?
Know
you're ridiculous. No, I didn't know.
I went to the Cannes Film Festival for a week. Yeah, and I did a file daily reports. Richard and Judy. Yeah.
What is your life anyway?
I interviewed Harrison Ford.
Really?
Yeah. Shook Woody Allen's hand, etc. Anyway, but Punch Drunk Love is an absolute masterpiece, and Paul Thomas Anderson is a genius, obviously, and I love Magnolia and I love Boogie Nights, blah, 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 There Will Be Blood, but I love Punch Drunk Love. It's a 90-minute joy. Then there's Mad Max Fury Road, which could have been higher, but that is by far the greatest action sci-fi epic adventure ever. Then I've got...
Number eight,
Dress to Kill, which is a Brian De Palma serial killer slasher horror film. It probably should be higher, actually, because it's one of the most incredible viewing experiences. I saw that in a cinema in America, in Miami, when I was on holiday with my dad. My dad took me on holiday. Yeah, my late father. But it's genius. Midnight Run.
And number seven.
Robert De Niro, Charles Grodin. It's an out-and-out, brilliantly rollicking adventure comedy. It's hilarious. That's the film I turn to, you know, anytime for some comfort, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Psycho is next.
Number six.
Alfred Hitchcock's unbelievably groundbreaking masterpiece. Norman Bates, etc. Fantastic. Don't need to explain much more about that. Seven. There's a lot of serial killers in this list.
At number five, seven. Confusing.
Yeah. And number five, seven, David Fincher's serial killer masterpiece that, again, I watch probably twice a year, every year, since it came out. One of the most influential films ever. Yeah. Then there's Apocalypse Now.
And number four.
What number is that?
Number four.
Yeah. I mean, what else needs to be said? Francis Ford Coppola's Vietnam War masterpiece. I keep using the word masterpiece here. Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
At number three.
Yeah.
Timed.
Steven Spielberg, well timed, yeah. I've kind of like only done one film from directors. So I haven't done more than one film. But this probably would be the 10. Even if I doubled up, even if I didn't have that rule, I still probably would have chosen one per director. But for me, Steven Spielberg's real, incredibly effective, joyously uplifting film is Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Jaws is the one that probably most people would pick. You're laughing at the fact I'm still droning on.
No, not
number
at all.
Number two is 2001 A Space Odyssey. So two science fiction classics, two and three there.
James will be happy. I mean, he won't be happy about this segment, but he'll be happy that you've...
He won't be happy with the segment. I have never discussed 2001 with him. I've got a
sense. No, but sci-fi, he'll be happy. Yeah.
I am repping sci-fi. But I think he likes, hard sci-fi, like, I don't know, The Expanse. Yeah. I don't know if he has the good taste to acknowledge 2001 and Close Encounters.
I'm so happy he's on holiday and we don't get his, rebuttal.
And number one, Kay.
Go on.
Manhattan.
Woohoo!
Woody Allen. Yes.
Of course it's going to be a Woody Allen.
I know there are issues, but just purely there are many issues about this film, but it's the most beautifully made, stunning black and white cinematography, Kay. The opening alone, with George Gershwin music and the montage of New York, is one of the greatest sequences of all time. And I love Manhattan. I unashamedly am picking Manhattan, even though there are issues. Thanks!
Bravo for nailing your colours to the mast and finally coming up with this list that now we can always reference and refer to. Well, in fact, someone needs to put it somewhere. We need it written down.
All I'd say is, it's not going to stop. The only problem is, with this list doing a top 10 is that
For
Gary. Thanks, Gary, for asking. Is that there are still films are going to be mentioned and come up in conversation during this podcast, and they'll be outside the top 10. So I'll still say one of my favourite films. I consider any in the top 100 to be one of my favourite films.
Oh, my God. Don't over those parameters. Okay, all right. Well, at least now we have your definitive top 10.
Thank you for asking me to do that. And now, you know what it's time for now, Kay?
Ooh, news?
No.
What?
It's the interview. We've got a guest.
Of course, I forgot. Bring him on.
You may know him from The Office, Extras, Derek, Afterlife, Life's Too Short. And now he has given us the joy of, although it's heavily embargoed, to review Alley Cats, which is a fully animated 6-part comedy about a bunch of cats that gather in a kind of burnt out basement of a building, and they sit there and chew the fat and watch telly and just have a lovely time. We discussed all things Alley Cats and more in this lovely interview. Take it away, Ricky Gervais. Ricky Gervais, welcome to the Pilot TV podcast. Welcome back to the Pilot TV podcast. How are you?
Good. Yeah, feeling all right, considering.
Yeah. Yeah.
Considering my age.
60,
and weight.
64 are you now?
65, thanks
65,
for
sorry.
Shaving a year off. It all helps.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you've got a big new show to talk about, Alley Cats.
Yeah.
Before we get into the creation of it, there's one thing I have to ask you about it, having watched it. Because it thrilled me so much, this sequence. Can you guess the sequence? There's a sequence involving music, involving one of the greatest songs of all time.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's the first thing I thought of. It's the first scene I thought of to show the style and sort of mood of this piece, and to sort of try and, not humanize the cats, but, I wanted people to know these cats sort of had feelings, and I assume you're talking about There Is a Light by the Smiths sequence.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, I love that. I love what comes before it and what it leads to as well. It's great doing 15-minute stories. They're all like mini films, so you can really pack it in. And because the way we made it as well, unlike most animations, I've done loads of animations. I've done like a dozen or so films and series. And it's, you're always alone in a booth with a director down the line going, okay, just say that. Here it comes down. 1, 2, 3, and just say that. Sometimes you get to ad lib, but it's because, you know, the way they make animation, they're so expensive. They're written, they're storyboarded, then they're cast, and then you have to make it just right for the studio. There's 15 execs. We did this like a podcast. I cast before I wrote it, and then we were all in the same room and we were mucking around. We had, I'd say, an hour per episode to cut down to the best 15 minutes, which is a nightmare. It's a luxury, but it's a nightmare because, you know, there isn't just one story in there. So what you find out is that as fun as it is doing all the ad-libs, and it's mental, we kept pushing it. I kept stopping going, can we do this? Can we say this? Which is very exciting for me. For me to question myself is always an exciting moment. What you realize is, in the cold light of day, follow the screenplay. You follow the screenplay, and it's just 10 times better than you imagined it because it's so dense and fast and natural.
So was the Smiths There as a Light, was that in the script? Did you have that? Right.
Yeah, because the other thing, of course, is because this takes so long, I had to get permission. Otherwise, sequence is probably 50 grand.
Right.
And then they say, no, we don't really use it in that thing. So obviously we asked, and then they said, you have to write a letter to Mr. Morrissey and Mr. Marr. And they both said yes, which was great, which was very exciting for me. I'm a huge Smiths fan. You know that.
Yeah.
I've been a Smiths fan for nearly 40 years, whatever. And that probably is not only their greatest song, but one of the greatest pop songs of all time.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. It's a masterpiece of a song. And then, the fact that I'm effectively saying you got Morrissey and Marr back together again. Because
you can say that if you want.
Yeah, that's unite in approving use of their song for Alley Cat. Yeah. So, you know.
But it would just work so well.
Yeah.
It just works so
because
well.
Because the lyrics, we could get, you know, double decker bus, 10 ton truck. They could be applied to cats. Cats do have to worry about being run over by 10 truck cats.
More than
cats.
People. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's one of the themes as well, that there's danger everywhere and life is short for a cat and life is tough and they've got to make the most of it. That's one of the themes, I'd say. Along with, it's a little bit Orwellian in the sense that, you know, two legs bad, four legs good. The threat is humanity, I guess. Along with everything else, they have to worry about starving, being hit by a car. So that's such a joyous song. It's such a joyous, positive song about dying with someone you love.
I'd love to. I really want to be a fly on the wall when, you know, Morrissey watches it. Or, you know.
Well, we had to show them the context. Oh, okay. Obviously, they couldn't see the finished pictures, but they had to know the context. Yeah. It was me, it was adult animation. I don't know what we'd have done if they had said no, but you know, everyone said yes. Once again, I've used the lovely Netflix animation budget to put in some of my favorite songs and artists of the last 60 years.
Yeah. With Coldplay as well. And Cat Stevens, you always have Cat Stevens. You're very loyal.
So Cat Stevens, the story there, we nearly used sitting for The Office, but then Rod Stewart just beat him, pipped him at the post. But then I used T for the Tillerman. Then I used The Wind and Lily White in Afterlife. Yeah, so this is probably the... Yeah. I did use Sitting in the end. I used it in The Invention of Lying, But the original was too expensive because it was a film. So I got Elvis Costello to do a cover.
Yes. Elvis Costello's there on Forties in the back of
it. Oh, of course.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, I think I used to know the lyrics to that off by heart. And he just went into the studio. I told him about it. He said, I haven't heard that song. And then I went, I'll have a listen. And then it must have been like 3 days later, he said, I went into my mate's studio. Is this all right? And he just sent me the finished master.
Wow.
That's crazy.
That's incredible. That's brilliant. So these recording sessions where you recorded the audio for what then gets animated, will we ever get to, it'd be a lovely extra, wouldn't it? For us to get to see one of those actual sessions and watch, were they filmed at all, you not want that?
I think it would be a lovely extra, but not till I die. Because, now you've come along to, I think you've probably had a set visit on everything I've ever done over the last 25 years.
Yeah, right? I believe so, yeah.
And what you get is you see 2 or 3 minutes of script done for 6 hours. It's not as exciting, is it? Do you know what I mean? I mean, yeah. It's nice to be behind the scenes, but...
It is repetitive.
So, and my days are short and fast.
Yeah.
So you go on some places, you will see a man running down the road 300 times. And then going, okay, see you tomorrow. So mine are probably more exciting days than most because we get a lot done, and I do move on, and we change it all the time. So I think there's a bit of that in it, that you think you want to see hours and hours of footage, but then you wish someone had edited it all together for you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think the rule. I don't think unless something exciting happens, unless something that's just so out there that we couldn't go in. But
yeah, that's in my mind what I was thinking of, that stuff that's so extreme that you thought twice about using it in the final.
Yeah, but we put that in. That's the 15 clearly, minutes.
Yeah,
we put in the most extreme 15.
It feels like at the end of it, I thought, is this the record for the most amount of swearing in one TV show?
Well, it might be. It might be. I don't know. I've never really. I mean, that's the only reason kids can't watch it, if we're being honest.
Yeah.
You know, it's a really cozy, sweet, sort of philosophical sort of journey. There's lots of elements. There's love and death. There's romance, but they swear a lot. You know, there's no like horrible, gratuitous violence or sex or all the other things that's in live action that kids can't
watch. There's a bit of violence, to be fair.
There is a little bit of I think...
No spoilers.
Yeah, no spoilers, but does it involve a kid in a skate park?
Yes. Yeah. I was like, okay, you've gone through with that.
Well, when we showed that bit at the cast and crew screening, it got a round of applause.
Oh, I bet.
That probably shows what sick people I work with.
It is incredible to see. Yes. But the swearing, what's interesting about the swearing and your character, I think in particular, is he's saying a lot of, you know, he's saying effing and jeffing and cunt this, cunt that, and making incredible politically incorrect jokes often. But he's got a heart, isn't he? He's at heart, he's a good guy. And that's an interesting thing, I think, because
he's not as tough as he thinks. He's not as smart as he thinks. He's more vulnerable than he lets on. He's got anxiety, you know. He's a normal. I know he's a cat, but let's talk about him like he's a normal guy who wants to do the right thing. He's at the bottom of the pile. He's sort of, you know, he's trying to get on. His life is short. You know, he's halfway through. He's got a lot of responsibility. He's a cat. He's a cat. So he's angry and he's tired and he's furious and he's hungry. It's sort of, there's a developmental arc with Gus's character. Even though you can watch it, you know, individually, it does work as a binge. It does work as a 90-minute film,
yeah.
Because you know there's the romance, there's the There's the finding the kitten's home. There's the, you know, Gus's sort of in a monologue. So there's lots to deal with in the 90 minutes, but it works so well as I'm going to get addicted to 15 minutes. If I do the next thing I do, if it's a sitcom, it's 15 minutes.
Honestly, the art of brevity, mastering the art of brevity is so key.
Yeah.
And there is something lovely about those 15 minute chunks.
They're so complete and satisfying, and they're so rip roaring. It's so fast. You've got the good. I hope not only do they watch them all at once, but I think that I want them to watch it again immediately because you'll miss bits because they are talking at the same time. And that, you know, we're trying to, it's hard to sort of cut that to make it easy, but it's such an easy watch.
Totally.
I had one mantra all the way through, actually two mantras. I said, audio is king. We've already cut that. This is king audio. Do the animation to the audio. And the other one was, I just want people to love these cats because, as you say, the things they're doing and saying, if that was people, it would be pretty horrific. But they're cats, so it's all right.
Yes. I love the fact that Gus is embarrassed about dancing as well, that little detail.
Again, I made him that sort of that old-fashioned guy who's not quite in tune with his feelings. He doesn't introspect much. He just shouts out the things that are at the forefront of his mind. He thinks he's sorted it all out. The more you scratch him, the deeper he gets, really. Like everyone, you know. Yeah. I haven't changed the genre. That's any good character in a sitcom has got to have layers, unless the joke is that they don't have layers.
Mm.
But there's got to be surprises and you've got to learn more about them. The problem with sitcom is, by its very sort of nature, that's a difficult thing to do because with a novel or a film or a serial, you have a beginning, middle, and end. Mm. Sitcom, it's all middle. You've got to hit the ground running. This is what they're like, and they're already like that. And they've got to end up like that. So the changes have got to be really assimilated without people going, this isn't the thing I started watching. Do you know what I mean? It's absolutely tricky. It's got to be different every time and the same every time.
Yes.
And so I tried to make it feel the same. You know, it's palindromic. They start waking up on the couch. They end falling asleep on the couch. The adventure is, you know, we know what's going to happen usually. Although I think this is probably the least predictable thing I've ever done because there's lots of surprises because that's where the conversations went. Because the way I filmed it, we do the screenplay and I go, okay, I'm going to go around. Right. So say your favorite way to die. And I'd put them on the spot, you know, some of them. And then, you know, particularly someone like David Earle would always throw a spanner in the works. And we'd all crack up and I go, no, say that. I'll say this before it, though. I'll give you this line. Yeah. Say that, exactly that. And we've left some of the laughter in as well.
Yes, I love
that. We're trying to get out a point. If someone's trying to get out a point, we've left in the laughter. You can see, you can hear people stifling, particularly with headphones, I think. You can hear some of the
I like the fact that David Earle, most of David Earle's stuff is involving perverse sex of some kind or another.
Yeah, but very inventive as well.
Very inventive.
Very inventive. That's the other thing is I don't want people to think this isn't, even the term adult animation has got connotations. It's, you know, I want people to know it's adult animation like The Simpsons and Family Guy is. It's not gross out. It's not spiky.
No.
It's not made for you know, troubled teenagers. It's quite elegant. It's quite sweet. It's quite philosophical. It's just that sometimes they talk rubbish, you know, and they have urges. But there's no anatomy. There's no, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. It's like delightful and yet at the same time full of outrageousness. It's like marrying those two is really interesting, I think. Because I think it's, you know, the dialogue must be the most outrageous you've ever had in a show, but it's, at the same time, it's got real heart and soul to it as well. And that's
because they're idiots.
Yes.
They don't know about the world. So when they say something absolutely outrageous and mental, it's with no malice. They believe it because they're stupid. And at one point they go, we got brains the size of a walnut. They go, we haven't got any responsibility, you know, when they're going to kill the kid. They go, we've got no...
Exactly. I also love that you've got you're in your repertory company, which it now is, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Tom Basden is always the middle class one, and you've named him to celebrate that fact, Ponce, which is perfect for him.
Yes.
You have him playing a bit of a Ponce in all the shows you've had him in
before. Yeah, and I think that's because I like to sneak in the classic British sitcom class struggle. You know, we've always done it. Even if it's not obvious, we've always had someone who's a fish out of water. And there's another theme that I've always liked from really early stuff like Groucho Marx, Woody Allen, through to Lisa Simpson. It never pays to be the smartest person in the room.
Mm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's that thing. It's better to be popular than clever.
Yeah.
And he's a fish out of water and he can't win. You know, but it's brotherly as well.
Mm.
They love each other. They argue like families argue. They argue like you tease friendship. Your older brother for being smarter than you. You know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I thought it was about friendship as well. Yeah, I really.
It is about. Yeah. It's exactly about that. It's about friendship. You know, most sitcoms are about a set of recurring characters. They're usually a family, either literally or metaphorically. You know, Bilko is a family. They're in the army. You know, Porridge is a family, and then there's literal families: the royal family, Steptoe and Son, Only Fools and Horses. The other thing, staple of a sitcom, is that they have to be trapped in some way. Yes. That either literally, metaphorically, economically, and these cats are trapped because they're cats. What they're going to do? They found a couch in a disused house, and that's it. That's their life. They better make the most of it.
Like all those guys were trapped in Wernham Hog.
Exactly. They're sort of trapped because you let it happen. That was like the theme. There was it's your fault, really.
Yes.
You know, it's not that bad. But if you want to do something else, you better do it now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's always a level of being trapped, I think, in the best.
The other thing that it reminded me of, I don't know if this is an influence for you, but it reminded me of Derek and Clive, you know, that Peter Cook and Dudley Moore.
One of the things I said to the actors that this is like, because I wanted to do it like a podcast. So I said, it's like a cross between Derek and Clive at Animal Farm and Only Fools and Horses. That was the three things I cited. And the other thing about it is it's a bit retro punk.
Mm.
It's like they're trying to say screw the world,
yes.
But they can't, you know. And that's a staple as well. That's things from like things like Citizen Smith.
Yeah, yeah, and
that was a sort of
Vivian in the Young Ones.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That sort of like, you know, there's
in fact, still, they even talk like him a bit, don't they? Some the way that you,
they every single person nailed their part better than anyone else could have. I on every one of their parts, those actors did. I couldn't think of a better person to do that than them, which is. Yeah. Well, you know, it was sort of formed around them. So, they're all amazing. They're all amazing. But like Andrew Brooke, oh God, he's a beast.
Yeah,
with improv and staying in character saying the right thing for that character is incredible.
And you have Diane Morgan, who is like, you know, one of the most talented and impressive and, you know, successful comedy writers and performers. And she's got a little fantastic little part in this ensemble. It's that, you know, that level of talent.
Which grows and grows. And same as she did in Afterlife, Kath. Kath was a little part that grew and grew over the series. And it's same, like, if we get the second series, her part's like twice as big, you know. Joe Hartley as Kitten, Tony Way as the drug dealer, and a few others. Natalie Cassidy as Gus's mum, and an old flame of puke, which is a very funny cameo. Yeah, Kerry Godleyman, and as you say, Tom Basden. Tom Basden's great as well because he sees the bigger picture. That, as you say, they're not those people aren't actors for hire. They're all writers and directors and producers. So they always bring something else. They always bring a different backstory. I couldn't predict some of the ad-libs. I just couldn't predict them, you know.
Yeah, that's brilliant. There is one amazing scene as well where you sing a lullaby. That I thought was so interesting. And did you prepare? Were you slightly nervous about doing that?
Yeah, I was, because you don't want people to think you think that you're good enough to sing in a thing. So, but I wanted to be in tune, but I didn't want it to be too good for a fat cat who doesn't sing. So I had to make it just sort of slightly, you know, like he was laying down and a bit breathy and quiet. And it was just more about the mood than belting out a show tune. But, I think I was worried about it. Yeah. Yeah. You are worried when you do anything like that.
Yeah.
Dance, sing, play an instrument, win a fight. All those things are on the edge of going, you just wanted to show you had biceps. There's always a hint of that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah. Brilliant. Well, we've ran out. I could talk all day, all night about Alley Cat's Netflix, 7th of August. Everyone's going to watch it. Thank you so much, Ricky.
Everyone's got to watch it. It's the new law, actually.
Yeah, that's a fair.
It's the new law,
Thank you so much. That was Ricky Gervais talking to me recently over the Zoom. And Alley Cats, of course, itself arrives on the Netflix on Friday, the 7th of August. And we would review it in this episode, but it is heavily embargoed. So I think we're reviewing it next week when Steph will be joining you and I.
Yes, she's excited to watch it as well. So it's good.
Very exciting. Now, even though, listeners, we're recording this slightly more in advance than we normally do, we are still going to do a new section. I'm going to begin by asking you a question.
Go on.
Did you know that Game of Thrones, which is one of your favourite shows, right?
Didn't you
watched it, or you didn't? There was a big
challenge. I was limbering up to do it. It was going to be Game of Thrones, which will still happen at some point, yeah. It's on the list. It's on my sofa list.
Right, but you've never actually watched an episode.
Not for.
I'm not trying to throne shame you, by the way. I'm just.
No. I think I've watched the first episode.
Right. Did you know that there is a live theatrical play?
What?
Starting now, at the Theatre Royal, Stratford upon Avon, by the Royal Shakespeare Company.
How are they going to condense that? And how?
Well,
are they
This is the second. My second point. The first point is I didn't know this was happening until I was asked to review it. So I'm going to see it, not this Saturday, but the Saturday when I get back from my holiday.
Question: are you taking James? Is this a?
No, I don't think I haven't got a plus one.
He would have loved
that. But let me just say, in terms of how do you hone it down, the answer to your question is it's 4 hours long.
What?
Indeed.
Oh my gosh! I hope the seats are comfortable, Boyd. Or take a cushion.
Can you imagine?
No, horrific.
No, I know. 4 hours. 4 hours long.
You need drinks. You need snacks. You need a cushion.
I'm mainly worried about my how can we put it? Needing to go to the loo regularly.
Yeah. Oh, actually, okay. Skip the drinks.
Weak bladder. No, you've got to keep hydrated, haven't you?
No, but I don't think you do if you're going to be up and down. You can't irritate the people next to you going, oh, excuse me.
I might have to ask the publicist for it to guarantee me an aisle seat because, you know.
Yes. Okay. I think that's fine.
Is that too much being too much of a diva?
No, I think you have a condition and that needs to be recognised with an aisle seat for everyone's sake, not least your fellow theatre goers. But that's exciting.
Yeah. But anyway, the reason I put it in news was it was news to me that that it was happening. This huge production, 4 hours long, an official Game of Thrones play, and it's all and you know it's all literally happening at the RSC in Stratford upon Avon.
And are there any big names?
Do you know what? I don't think, I'm just looking on now.
Not but that there needs to be, I'm just wondering.
So it's described as, it's called Game of Thrones, The Mad King, a new play based on the novels by George R. R. Martin, adapted by Duncan Macmillan and directed by Dominic Cook. Dominic Cook is a really, they're both really highly respected theatrical types, to coin a phrase. But the cast includes Eddard Stark is played by Michael Abubakar. So Jaime Lannister is Maxim Ice. Brandon Stark, Luke Brady. You'll recognise these people.
I'm going along, but actually, I suppose if I saw pictures, I'd recognise.
I would say it's not hugely star led, which it probably doesn't need to be, does it? Because obviously, the whole concept of a Game of Thrones play is that it's Game of Thrones, right? It doesn't need to have a star.
Big ensemble piece.
Yeah, but I am recognising a lot of these actors anyway from kind of TV work they've done. I'm going to see that.
That's exciting.
In a couple of weekends' time.
You'll have to let us know what it's like.
Thanks. Yeah, I will. Definitely. Yeah, for sure. What news have you got?
Okay, so I clicked on a link about Doctor Who, and it said that Jodie Whittaker and Mandip Gill were reprising their respective roles as the 13th Doctor and Yasmin Khan in an upcoming Doctor Who adventure. And I was like, what? But it turns out it's being released as an audio drama. And this seems to be a theme at the moment because I'll come to another story. But anyway, just to let you know that if you are fans of Jodie and Mandip, that the audio drama is called The 13th Doctor Adventures, The Greatest Train Robbery. And it is written by Carissa Hamilton-Bannis, who has previously written on Hollyoaks. And it's going to be available as an audio drama, which seems to be a theme because earlier in the week I was looking around for new stories and we're big fans of Johnny Bailey, as Boyd likes to call him, and obviously Leslie Manville. And again, it was a brand new adaptation of Bram Stoker's Dracula, but this time was coming out in October. Again, it was going to be an audio drama for Audible. So I was like, it's obviously becoming more of a big thing to get these big names in audio dramas, either on the radio or on Audible or wherever.
I like
audio drama, so I was quite happy about that.
Of course, non-Who obsessive, there's a whole tradition of audio adventures, audio books, Doctor Who. It's big news that she was doing it. Yeah. No apology needed. But I'm just bringing it in context. Yeah, it's a big thing that there are for years there've been. Audio adventures from Doctor Who, spin-offs from Doctor Who, and it's a big thing.
And always with the Doctors playing.
Well, it varies. So there might not always. No, so often they'll go back to other characters. Supporting characters might get a story focusing on them, but some of the old school Doctor Who actors might be involved, like Peter Davison. It varies, but there are a lot of. It might be an adaptation of, because there's Doctor Who books, Doctor Who novels. It's a whole thing. Okay.
Anyway. Oh, okay. Apologies.
No, honestly. Stop saying apologies.
But also, I found it interesting because recently I saw that one of Jilly Cooper's books, because I thought all Jilly Cooper's works now would just be made for TV. Yeah. But again, that was another, it was going to be an Audible original audio drama. It's called A Pressing Engagement, which dropped, I think, last week. Okay. If you're into audio dramas, that's just something to look out for.
Absolutely. A film that I could have and maybe even should have included in my top 10.
It's not allowed now. That is absolutely
lockdown. This is what I'm talking about. This probably was number 11, Bubbling Under.
Oh, God, no.
Along with Austin
and
America.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. No. But the reason I mention it is because it was a news story. First to say that, the San Diego Comic-Con happened at the weekend, Kate. Do you know what that is?
Yes. It is where all these big news stories are coming from, because I saw them as well.
Yeah. So San Diego Comic-Con is a massive event, biggest of its kind, where all of basically nerdy, geeky properties, intellectual properties, and all of the big studios, the film studios and TV studios, Marvel, Prime Video, Netflix, etc., they unveil a lot of their upcoming content, and they're the first place you see trailers. There's loads of trailers of big shows.
Is this where James is on holiday?
This no, but it is where Chris Hewitt of the Empire podcast. He went there And he you can get a whole report. So I'm not going to delve into all of the TV related stories that happened, that were unveiled at Comic Con, because Chris has done a standalone if you subscribe to Empire Plus, I think maybe even if you don't, you can still access his standalone look at all of these stories, film and TV stories. So I think he mentions like Marvel TV shows, but I wanted to mention for me, the most exciting thing that was unveiled at San Diego Comic Con was the trailer for Blade Runner 2099. Okay, and Blade Runner is that show, that film I was talking about that's bubbling under in my top 10. And some weeks probably would have been in the top 10. Anyway.
But alas, wasn't.
Have you watched the trailer, Kay? I'm sure it was top of your list.
No, I haven't. Was it good?
Well, the trailer was absolutely spectacular. I think it looked incredible. One of the things about Blade Runner, the film, is it's one of the most influential. Its look, the cityscapes and the kind of noirish, dark neon lit element to it is stunning. It's got one of the most stunning opening sequences ever in terms of visual effects and the visuals of it. And this trailer looked unbelievably, looked beautiful. Like the way they've kind of incorporated the original look of Blade Runner and the subsequent belated sequel as well that Ryan Gosling was in, but also giving it a slightly new feel as well. It stars Hunter Schafer from Euphoria. Michelle Yeoh is in it as well. And Hunter Schafer looks really good in it. And they also announced it's premiering on November 25th on Prime Video.
Oh, okay. That's exciting for you. Just the last bit of my news was going to be about...
Oh, last bit?
Yes. Well, I'm okay. Just looking at the clock, Boyd. We're teetering towards an hour and we haven't done the reviews. I think James is going to go absolutely banana crackers. I know he's not here, but I'm just always having him in the back of my mind.
This is brief. This is like, we're not even close to... What are you talking about? We go into like an hour and a half usually. Absolutely.
It's interminable.
If that's why you're... Please don't censor yourself because I'm droning on in the UN, so I don't want
to... I embarked on the audio drama stories, I was like, God. What am I doing?
No. This is... No. We carry on until, you know...
Okay.
Where for the phrases? The cows come home. Is that right? Okay.
Something. Well, I tell you, he's coming home. Morgan Spector. So I really loved him in The Gilded Age, as you know, fan of that period drama. And it's been announced that he will be playing Robert Langdon, who is a Dan Brown character in Dan Brown's novel, The Secrets of Secrets, which will be coming to Netflix. So I think that's really exciting because I love Morgan Spector and Dan Brown's books. I mean, hit and miss, but...
You love them.
No. But I love Morgan Spector. I think he's great in that lead.
The role played by Tom Hanks in the frankly terrible film versions.
Yeah.
Of those.
Well, let's
books.
Hope for a better result with Morgan.
Oh, that's like a surefire hit, isn't it? Completely.
I think so.
Yeah. Did you see the story about a show called Yaga on Sky? Oh, yeah. This is coming up on Sky in later in the autumn. And it's described as Sky Today unveiled the first look at Yaga, Y-A-G-A, a seductive contemporary mystery thriller starring Carrie Ann Moss from The Matrix, Noah Reed from Schitt's Creek.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, your favourite. Mm-hmm. And Hudson Williams. Do you know who Hudson
Williams? Yes, of course I do. Heated rivalry,
Kate. Yeah. So this effectively...
You've piqued my interest, Boyd.
Yeah, this is an interest piquer. I deliberately picked this news story.
You know exactly what you're doing with this story.
I know, to get you excited. Yeah. And many of the listeners as well. And not only has this... this thing can be confirmed for October. It's going to be October on Sky and now.
Yeah.
But the trailer includes... I would say raunchy scenes with Hudson Williams.
Listen, give the audience what they want, Boydo.
So not only is this a Hudson Williams project, but the famously frequently naked actor in, as he is seen in Hated Rivalry, also gets quite hot and bothered from what I've seen in the like minute long trailer for this show Yaga. So I'm excited.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
It's an 8-parter. Do we have a date, did he say?
October. And it's created and written by Kat Sandler. And I'll just read you the synopsis. Yaga follows Rap, a private investigator who arrives in a small coastal town to investigate the disappearance of a young heir to a powerful fishery played by Hudson Williams. So Hudson Williams is the character who's disappeared. Fishy. Literally fishy. He finds himself at odds with an apprehensive local detective, Carson, played by Clark Bacow, a charismatic university professor with a taste for younger men. Catherine, Carrie Ann Moss, and a labyrinth of enigmatic suspects, secret lives, and ancient magic. Exciting times.
Okay, yeah, exciting times.
I might mention one more show. Did you know Prime Video is excited to announce, Prime Video, as we call it on this podcast, is excited to announce a new four-part docuseries chronicling Spain's historic World Cup triumph, featuring brand new footage, exclusive access to the players and coaching staff behind the team's second World Cup final victory. I love it when a sports documentary is announced where they're filming it all along. And they haven't told you they were filming it all along. And then suddenly they go, oh, we just happened to be filming this all along. And Spain won the World Cup final, listeners, as James probably wouldn't know. So I'm excited by this idea. Because there were rumours last year that there was a secret special documentary about Arsenal that they were going to unveil. It turns out it hasn't happened. So I don't think they were filming, for general consumption. I think you can get lots of videos on Arsenal's own content. But I think this is exciting. A docuseries coming later in the year.
Now, the only thing, the thing that would get me excited is if in that they have captured, is it Lamine Yamal?
Yeah,
his brother, who is, oh my God, Boyd, I can't tell you how obsessed with I've come with his little brother, who is the absolute star of the World Cup. Attention grabbing.
Adorable.
You know, he is so adorable and sweet and funny and such a great dancer. Anyone who's interested, please go to Instagram and just look up his, Yamal's name and find it, because there are so many clips of his brother being cute at the World Cup, and I'm hoping he's got a starring role in this.
Absolutely, yeah. He is hilarious and brilliant. Yeah. And the whole story of Lamine Yamal and his family and such is incredibly moving as well. Let's wrap up news.
Now you've got me
worried about the timing, even though, as I say, we frequently hit the 90-minute mark.
3-hour mark.
It's time for the reviews section, Kay.
Woo-hoo.
Now, I'm going to leave... we've got three shows to review.
Mm-hmm.
Possession, which is the Guga and Bartha Raw. I would describe it as a thriller, right?
Yeah.
In many ways. Benidorm's Murder, the John Hannah. I would say it's got cozy crime.
Yeah.
On Five, in a location, i.e. Benidorm.
Yeah.
And Lioness, Season 3... with Zoe Saldana and lots of stars, Nicole Kidman, Morgan Freeman, etc. Which of those do you want to go first with?
I think Benidorm should be the meat in the sandwich. I think we should start with Possession.
Yes. Possession, in which we follow lawyer Guga and Bartha Raw to Jamaica to investigate a huge bit of land and big house has been left to a mysterious person who lives there by the benefactor who owned it in the first place. And she goes to investigate what the hell is going on with this place and why it's been left to this mystery person. While Jolene Lee Miller plays the person who expected to inherit him and his family this lavish, huge, big place. Kay? What did you make of Possession? I haven't thought up a pun. Were you possessed by Possession? I mean, that's lame, isn't it?
Do you know, a little bit, but I was, actually, I have to say. So this is a five-part gothic thriller. And as Boyd says, it's kind of... Gugu is this ambitious biracial lawyer, Claudia, who is tasked with going to Jamaica to kind of disprove that this local man, Cujo East, has inherited this huge fortune because the white aristocratic, very wealthy son of the benefactor, Oliver, played by Johnny Lee Miller, just can't see how this would possibly happen because no one knows who this Cujo is within the family. And so she heads out there and she is hell-bent on succeeding in this case because she wants to get promoted. And you get the sense that she's also trying to, there's stuff bubbling under the surface that she's trying to ignore. Her mum died when she was young, her Jamaican mother, her father is alive. And there's just a sense that there's a sense of unease in her. But anyway, she's blocking it out with work. And when she gets there, she has this real sort of sense of uneasiness about the family home that she visits, which is called Hope Hill, ironically named, because actually it was a former plantation. And she gets this sort of, she seems to be familiar with it in some way. There's, you know, and she's very unsettled by the behaviour of one of the employees, Angelo, who he acts in a, I'm not going to give any spoilers, but he acts in a quite bizarre way, she thinks, and she's spooked by it. We get flashbacks as well, which ordinarily I'm not so keen on, but actually I thought was quite good in this because we follow two timelines. So it's this current day when she's working on this legal case. And then we are also sort of taken back to the awful, horrible history, brutal past of the plantation. It's 1760. And there's two half siblings who are vying for their father's favor. What I really liked about this is that I think, first of all, I think it's really beautifully done. It's gorgeous to look at. It reminded me in a way of, do you remember Get Millie Black?
Yeah.
Which was also, you know, it was shot in Jamaica, but gave a really sort of real, authentic portrayal of it rather than just the, you know, the lovely sandy beaches and stuff. It felt very raw and real and authentic. So I loved how it was shot. It explores this idea of reparation and the idea that the sins of the father are coming back to haunt, you know, the offspring. And Claudia, in taking on this case, unwittingly is sort of unlocking parts of her past. And the story resonates with her in ways that she hadn't realized. And I think it's a really sensitively handled, good portrayal of how the black slaves were treated by their masters and the injustices they experienced. And through the storytelling and the flashbacks and also the exploration of like witchcraft, I think it's just very smartly done and it's thought provoking, but it's really deeply atmospheric, like quite chilling. And I was really taken with it, and it's twisty and there's a sense of foreboding, and I wanted to watch the next episode. So yeah, I enjoyed it. What about you?
Yeah, I did. I enjoyed it as well. I think what most impressed me about it was I've seen kind of shows and films that have elements of this kind of story in them. You know, there are loads of 12 Years a Slave, you know, sorts of depictions of slavery and plantation life, etc. And I've seen kind of supernatural horror-y type films, particularly that depict this kind of world. But the way the elements of this show are brought together is the present day stuff, the mystery of the benefactor giving it to the mystery of Cujo East, as you say, the kind of hints at supernatural goings on when she arrives in this house are you know, very well done, because it's easy, they can easily come across as silly or, you know, kind of preposterous, or they're very handled with a light touch in the sense that they're keeping it, you know, there's not spectacular CGI, you know, phantoms, you know, going swinging around the house, if you like. So there's an element of realism to it for what is going to be turned, which is already in the first episode turning out to be a fantastical kind of story. And then it starts cutting between in a very, I love the transition. The first transition from present day with Gugu to the past, to the plantation where Belle Powley is there, and she's kind of having this horrible dinner with her father, who's horrendous, and one of the slaves is humiliated and all of that. I thought that was such a clever transition. And then from then on, you actually see, I would say, more than just flashback, it becomes like a split timeline drama, really, whereby you've got the goings on, the mysterious, bizarre goings on in the present day, who is Cujo East, etc., and the kind of parallel historical stuff, whereby, you know, the characters back in those days, back in the days of slavery, what happened to them impacts on, again, but not too heavy-handed, the what's going on today. And I thought so it was really interesting. So the thing that most impressed me about it was I'd never seen this thing before. It's rare, you know. In the days of, you know, we weren't that keen on Furious, we reviewed last week, and I've seen lots of opinions split over Furious, by the way. I was going to mention that in...
A bit like Android. Anyway, Karen.
Android is much, much better than Furious, but people love Furious. People are like, oh, this is a feminist, like, great feminist masterpiece, and people really enjoy it. We didn't like it particularly at all. But the reason I bring it up is there's loads of serial killer thrillers at the moment. You know, there's lots of crime capers with gangsters, rival gangland groups pit against other gangland groups, bent cops doing this, that, and the other. All of the, there's loads and loads of stuff that you generally see that kind of thing each week on TV. This is a whole new thing, right? I've never seen anything like this before on TV, is what I'm saying. Even with
refreshing.
It's very refreshing to get something that feels different and new and trying to show you something you might not have seen. And I think it's really clever. It's created by Carla Crone, by the way, who is a British... She's mainly known for being an actress. She was in Hit and Miss. She was in Misfits back in the day. And she's only 38, by the way. And she has created and has written, as far as I can tell, most of this show. And it's directed by Storm Salter, who's a Jamaican filmmaker, which I think is obviously really important that it's got a Jamaican filmmaker at the center of it. And he does a brilliant job because, as you say, it looks incredible, really atmospheric. It's got a really, really interesting atmosphere to it. And I just thought it was fascinating. Also good to see Johnny Lee Miller back, by the way. You don't see him that often for me. Like, you know, back in the day, he was like a kind of... frequenter of gangster films, Guy Ritchie stuff, but he's always really good, and I think he's really good in this. And Gugu Mbatha Raw can do no wrong, but she is so modulates this performance so well. She's obviously skipped, but the scene you're talking about that we don't want to spoil, where she's confronted by something quite shocking, and the way she reacts to that, and then the way she deals with it is really clever. Of course, she was in The War Between the Land and the Sea in December. That was the thing most recently. Did I interview her for this podcast? Definitely, we did. We chatted, and she's brilliant. She's a brilliant actress, and is fantastically cast in this. So yeah, I really enjoyed it. So that's Possession. It's on Sky Atlantic, and now from Thursday, the 6th of August, 2026. Okay.
I shall be continuing to watch.
And now, what did you describe it as? The meat in the sandwich.
Well, I didn't say what kind of meat, but yeah.
Well, exactly.
Could be spam, could be quality beef, who knows?
It could well be spam. This is Channel 5, as it's now known. They've dropped the channel, just to be annoying. This is the latest 5 drama series, and it is set in Benidorm, as the title would suggest, and it stars John Hannah as Dennis Crown, who is an ex-police detective, left in kind of bad terms, left the force in bad terms, moved to Benidorm where he owns and runs a bar. I say runs a bar. I mean, he takes on a new employee, Rosa, played by Carolina.
Very few customers.
Very few customers. And there's one funny bit, actually, where a customer asks for if they can have lunch. And he goes and he looks at it, he's got a Breville toaster thing, and that's the only option for lunch in his pub. But you know, you started the review of the last one, so you know, even though I'm hosting and reviewing at the same time, I will dive straight in. And all I'd say about the thing that struck me about Benidorm was Murder is, and as soon as it was announced, and then I've seen the trailers and etc., I cannot get past the fact that John Hannah is D.I. Jack Clough when it comes to crime series. And he was the star of A Touch of Clough, the legendary piss take of this kind of show, in which he played alongside Saran Jones, who was an old man in it. And it was the incredibly stupid but brilliantly funny Charlie Brooker attempt to do a kind of airplane silly comedy about crime dramas and look at all of the different tropes and cliches. And he was the guy in the middle of it. And it was all about how cliched and preposterous he is. And now he's back doing an actual detective drama, playing this character. And I just kept thinking, and every now and then he does something or he has a reaction shot or he just, and I'm thinking, that's Clough. That's not your character in this show. So my main advice is, I mean, if you really want a cozy crime show, this is basically Murder, Death in Paradise, isn't it? Like, it's that format. It's a Brit abroad kind of finagling his way into an investigation with the help of one of the locals, who's also his employee. He's annoying the actual police, who's led by a DS Maria Hernandez, played by Ariadna Cabral. She's just constantly annoyed with him because he's sticking his nose in. It's all very, like, fish out of water, cozy crime being investigated, lavish scenery. I mean, Benidorm isn't wherever the hell Death in Paradise is set on that, which you went to once, didn't you? You did a set visit there. Guadeloupe. I mean, Benidorm isn't quite Guadeloupe, but it has that similar vibe to it, right? A little bit. I think it's aimed
well. It's sort of like it's more Brits Abroad, isn't it? So it's going to have like a revolving characters who are going to be quite heightened, I imagine. Or yeah, you know,
absolutely. What it has in common with certain recent crime, kind of cozy crime shows, is that it's all the whole mystery is wrapped up in one episode, mm-hmm. right? So in like, I would say like on in a 60-minute episode. Which is probably with ads, it's probably about 46, 47 minutes. And the whole thing is covered, is sorted out within the episode, which is quite satisfying in a way. But it does underline for me the unbelievable thinness of the central crime.
That's, which is that's a member my of a, issue.
Yeah, the member of a Take That tribute band is killed and thrown
Robbie
into
Williams.
The...
Robbie Williams, get it?
Robbie
yeah.
Williams. What's the name of the Take That, fake that?
Mistake That.
Mistake That. that's the big central crime that needs to be solved is why who killed him in his hotel bedroom and then threw him into the hotel swimming pool. But it feels so kind of like thin, as I say, and like not fleshed out and solved within about 5 minutes of getting to know the characters that yeah, it didn't feel particularly like a chewy, meaty thing.
What I'm hoping about that, because that is my main complaint about it, is that the crime wasn't particularly taxing and was solved very quickly. But I think perhaps in that first episode, they had to introduce all those characters, you yes. know, like the main characters. So hopefully in the Absolutely. Second episode, you know, they'll be able to dedicate more time to the crime.
Have you gone on and watched the second episode?
No, I haven't. I don't think it was available to me, Boyd. But do you know what I have to
could
say?
Have asked.
Listen. From the outset, we've said this is not a pilot show. We're reviewing it because it's a thin week. You know, everything's embargoed. It's a thin week. So we should say that.
Yes.
Highlight that again. We're not I'm not recommending this to pilot listeners necessarily. But I'm saying if you like cozy crime dramas that are set in sun-kissed locations, like recently I watched, was it A Taste for Murder on ITV with Warren Brown? This is in that kind of, this is of that ilk. And I think it is quite satisfying because it does all the things that you would expect. So and I won't go through them because Boyd's listed them. What the draw is for me, and I know it's like ironic because he played Cloth, but is Hannah.
John Hannah. Yeah.
John Hannah. Yeah. I think he's really good in the role. And he's this curmudgeonly, grumpy Scottish detective who's just basically drinking any small profits he gets. And the character of Rosa, who is the waitress, the new waitress, but she's also like an aspiring actress and she's quite bubbly. And it's that mismatch. Boyd, when I was watching this, it reminded me very much of you and me, right? It's that like mismatch dynamic.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Or someone of a younger, fresher, bubbly character cajoling this curmudgeonly. No, I'm joking. But I like their dynamic. I think it's really good. And I think that's the draw. I think that's the draw. And the chemistry between him and the inspector as well, I'm interested in. So
The female inspector?
Yes. Inspector Hernandez.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So you're comparing me with John Hannah. Okay. As Dennis Crown.
Mm.
Do you know what my complaint about... I think he's decent at it, yeah. I slightly worry, you know, like off camera, he's as grumpy as he is on camera. But
yeah.
I don't know. That's speculation on my part.
We might have a Frank Spencer Skinner situation on our hands. We don't know. But that's
exactly.
irrespective of that.
Exactly.
In this, I think he's good.
He is good. My one complaint, though, I was going to say my one complaint. I've got a few complaints about the whole show. But my one complaint about his character is they haven't really, I think they could have gone further. There are moments, he says something quite insulting to one of the characters, the one woman who wants to be an actress, right? The
yes.
barmaid who wants to be an actress. And he
Rosa.
Slags her off, Rosa, and he says something quite horrible to her. And then literally 5 seconds later, he apologizes. I'm like, no, you need to, this. If you're going to do a curmudgeonly, grumpy old man character, which I fully admit I can be, since you've compared us, then don't have him apologizing 10 seconds later for the quite funny thing he said. You've got to go through it. You've got to have the courage of your convictions. You've got to, you know, maybe the next
day he'll
apologize.
Boyd,
no.
Maybe that's what makes him different. Maybe you could take a leaf out of the book. Maybe the apology should just come a little bit swifter.
Let me just say I reject this comparison massively. I don't mind being compared to D.I. Jack Cloth from A Touch of Cloth. That's fine. You could be my Anne Old Man.
Old Woman.
Yeah, they haven't got the courage of their convictions with the character. He's too, in the end, he's too nice. And he's supposed to be really grumpy. So that was my main critique of it.
My only rebuttal to that, and I don't know why I'm defending
the show. The main defence.
No, but...
You love it.
I do think if he went down too much down the road, he would just be like stereotypical. It would be like all the other shows. At least this is a slight point of difference that he's not a complete...
Oh, you're seeing the point of difference. Wow. Yeah. Which, okay.
Maybe it's not like a lack of commitment to that stereotype and that, you know, cliche. It's actually like, okay, he's been worn down by life, but he's not a total arsehole.
Okay. So you're committing to watching the rest of the series.
Again, lessons we learn. I'll watch some more for you. Yeah, sure.
Will you? What? Really? Are you serious?
I'll watch one more.
Okay.
If you send me the screener.
What was that Channel 5 show that I...
Love Rat, that you're obsessed with.
I think this is, it's directed by Simon Delaney, who might be our ex-boss, Sam Delaney's relative, I think, but who knows? Not sure. But yeah, within in and of itself, it's not terrible, is it? It's
no,
fine.
I don't think it's so. Fine. I think it's fine. I think, not, like I said, was, if you I, like all those other shows, Taste of Murder, Death in Paradise.
I was fully expecting it to be embarrassingly terrible, I think. So I'm kind of pleasantly... It's not awful. If James was here, honestly, he'd be like, this is the worst thing ever. And
listen, if James was here, we wouldn't have done your film list. We wouldn't have talked about football.
Exactly. But like Benidorm itself, it's kind of cheap and cheerful, is what I would say. So, yeah. Anyway, Benidorm is Murder is on 5 now. Not now, as in the streaming service now. It's on 5 already. It's dropped. You can watch it now as this podcast goes out. Thank you very much. And now, finally... We reach Lioness, season 3 of the espionage action thriller spectacular, starring Zoe Saldana as the woman who kind of runs the Lioness program, which recruits women particularly to go undercover with dangerous people, mostly in the Middle East. Although this time, in this third season, Kay, the action moves quite substantially to Ukraine. What say you about Lioness? Have you watched, by the way, the previous two seasons of Lioness, or are you brand new to this particular show?
I watched the first episode. I think we previewed the first series and I watched that and I didn't continue. So I was coming in new. They do a handy recap. I mean, it is handy, but also still quite confusing if you're coming into it fresh. On a cause, I just want to bring up a thing. Zoe Saldana, is it Saldana or Saldana?
I think it's Saldana because she's got the thing on her end, hasn't she?
Oh, she's got a tilde. Okay, fine. Yeah, Zoe Saldana. She is in good nick and is my fitness goals now. The opening, like one of the first scenes is her like working out. She is absolutely in peak condition for this role. Yeah.
Since you've gone in early on her body and you do see quite an extensive amount of her body, I would add. Yes.
Yes. And also like Dave Annabelle, who I used to fancy in Brothers and Sisters, is also on good film. So like, yeah, aesthetically pleasing from that point
less,
of view.
Less naked shots of him though.
No, but yeah. So I'd say, look, I found the pre-credit sequence very arresting. Something like she is... in danger, Zoe's character. Is it Joe? Yeah, Joe.
Joe, yeah.
And that immediately does grab your attention. And then there's this requisite 6-month flashback to where she's deployed to Ukraine, right? And she's taken to Ukraine by her team who have to look after her. And Russians have somehow infiltrated a pipeline and they're using it to ferry troops and equipment. And they have to stop them. But also identify one of them in particular.
He's supposedly very high up in the Russian secret service or whatever, the Russian kind of KGB. Okay. Yeah.
Right.
I think that's the idea.
And she's the only one who can identify him. Or, yeah, she's the one who's been selected to do that. Because they're very hot on mentioning, because she wants to get involved and they're like, no, we have to protect you. You are the mission. You know, as much as getting this guy, right? Anyway, so they are, you know, there's swarms of drones, which I have to say was a little bit triggering for me because I've recently had an infestation of blue bottles. I was like hearing that.
I was going to say, is it triggering? Have you got drones outside your
no,
flat?
No, but that noise of them was so similar. Wow. Just side note, I walked into my living quarters the other day, my living room, and there's about 35 plus blue bottles. And I honestly, it was horrific. So, but yeah, there's all these drones and gunfire and stuff like this and robots, so new types of warfare. Anyway,
you've left out the most important element of all those things: dogs.
yes, dogs. Oh my God,
the dogs.
The dogs, the crazy dogs who were like trained to attack and kill.
Fuck's sake.
Sorry, that was on my list of things.
I'm glad I reminded you.
Which were fun, you know, like just fun and horrific. Horrific, like fun to see, like fun.
Dogs
like,
tearing. Oh my God.
No,
I have
in,
to
like,
say, I was not expecting the word fun to be used in connection with the use of dogs in the show.
It was just a fun element. Like, not fun, that's the wrong word. It was spectacular, like, okay, to see that, as well as the drones and the robots, whatever.
Yeah.
In spite of all that, the gunfire, the drone attacks, the crazy dogs, I found it boring. Mm. I found this boring. I did not care if they succeeded in their mission. You know, the fact that it starts with Jo alive at the beginning, even if though she's in peril at the beginning pre-sequence, the fact that she is alive negates any suspense over what's going to happen to her there and if she makes it out of Ukraine alive. So while they're all like, oh God, we've got to make sure she's okay, you know, like we sort of know that it's going to work out. But more than that, it might just be me. I found it so, I just didn't care. Even though it was visually very spectacular, they didn't build enough. You know, there's not enough relationship or not enough heavy lifting was done beforehand for me to go into the situation and think, right, I really want them to succeed in catching this Russian. So, yeah, that was my conclusion. A bit like the first episode of the first series. It is spectacular. It's well done. It's got great cast. But there's something about it. And I know, like, Taylor Sheridan's behind it. I don't know what it is. I just don't connect with this show, irrespective of the very well-acting dogs.
The very well acting dogs.
The good actors. Dog actors. Canine.
I don't know how they did that with the dog. Again, like a bit like how do they do that when it came to the pit? How they got those dogs, you know, how they train them to do what they have to do, and it's quite incredible. I found the use of dogs in this quite distressing, actually. I mean, I don't know. It's like dogs mauling humans and I mean,
I would have found it more distressing if the... Right. No, because nothing happened to the dogs. Spoiler alert, nothing happens to the dogs. If something happened to the dogs, I would have been like, no, dogs are fine. They got a nice meal out of it. It was fine.
There's one dog that doesn't... Anyway, maybe you got
what?
Bored. There's one dog. One dog gets... I'm trying not to spoil it. So anyway, one dog has issues.
Okay.
That's all I'd say.
I thought it was a human. Okay. But I did find it very dark as well when I was watching it. I don't know if it's because I was watching the screen
it is very
or it's
dark.
A laptop.
Oh,
so
yeah.
There are parts where it's like, who's that?
I was going to, I can see that because I watched it on my big screen. And even then, you know, I kind of airplayed
it to
my
TV. Okay.
Well,
now I'm devastated if what I've I realized my mistake. Okay.
There's definitely one dog in peril, is what I'd say. You don't see any horrible thing happen to the dog. People can think I'm spoiling it. But in the official spoilers list, by the way, there's only one thing that we're not supposed to talk about. And even then, since the show has already started, we could talk about it in theory. But the extent to which she, Jo, is in peril is kind of the crux of the whole of this particular series. And Taylor Sheridan, and by the way, you know, it's a shame in a way that Steph isn't here and James isn't here because they're obsessed with Taylor Sheridan's stuff now. You know that, don't you? They're completely gone to the dark side when it comes to Yellowstone, the spin-offs, Dutton Ranch. They don't stop shutting up about Dutton Ranch, okay? It's a nightmare. I have to put up with it every single fucking week, right? So it's a slight shame. And I know for a fact that James has been catching up on the previous seasons. So he will have to weigh in when he returns from his epic two-week holiday. Anyway, what's interesting is, obviously, Taylor Sheridan, right? He's responsible for almost literally dozens of different shows. And the level of his involvement in them varies from show to show. But this one is definitely one he's more... So unlike, say, Dutton Ranch, I think he just executive produces. He doesn't get involved creatively. This one, he's written. He's written this stuff. He is the credited writer on the first two episodes, which I watched two. Did you watch one or two?
No,
just one.
Absolutely.
Fair enough.
Just one.
Fair enough. Yeah.
I could not.
So all of the storytelling decisions that you're talking about, the fact that you were bored is down to him. And I think he's fucked this up, I have to say, this episode, because there's really good stuff in it. I think Lioness is at its best when you have these big discussions at FBI HQ or CIA HQ, which is CIA HQ, where she's called in to have long chats with her bosses, played by Nicole Kidman and Morgan Freeman and Michael Kelly. In fact, Michael Kelly is, you recognize from the American version of House of Cards. He's her actual boss. And there's some great scenes where they were sitting around vast tables in these offices talking about what tactics to deploy, particularly in episode two, actually. The way that Nicole Kidman has to go around cleaning up after Joe is really interesting as well. And it feels like Nicole Kidman is more involved in this third series than I think that she has before, at least to me, because I've on and off watched bits and pieces of the first two. But for me, the reason why Taylor Sheridan has screwed this one up is we don't need to see half an hour of this attack on the Russians in Donetsk in Ukraine.
But also, like, Boyd, it's like just you see the swarm of drones once.
I know.
I don't need to see it any more than like 1.5 minutes max.
Absolutely. Like, so on one level, it's an incredible piece of creativity and authenticity. No, well, let me on the one level, the level of authenticity and the fact that the way he depicts the literally thousands of drones, you know, in the sky, and then all the different elements of modern day warfare that he shows with all the cameras they've got on their helmets and all the different things. But it's just a boring action sequence to me. And it's very well done. It's brilliantly handled. But it kind of smells to me of Taylor Sheridan flexing his muscles, you know, and going, look what we can do now. We can depict and, you know, we can and controversially show Americans actually involved in Ukraine, which is, you know, it's a controversial thing to suggest is happening. Right.
Although they are at odds to say, you know, we're here and it's not our war, you know, like.
Sure. And they say stuff like that. Yeah, they talk about it, they debate about it. But it just really weighs down this opening episode. And James may be one of them. They're probably fans of this kind of stuff, like espionage thrillers, who love a big action sequence where you can barely see what's going on and all the, you know, the night vision and all the different, and the attack dogs and all of these things. That probably people think, oh, this is the best thing about this show are those action sequences. For me, though, I agree with you. I think he could have done that. He could have wrapped up that whole story element about that attack in 5 to 10 minutes, 10 minutes tops. Instead, it goes on and on and on and on in the only episode. And it detracts from the drama of the center of her life and the fact that how does she deal with her husband? You know, how does she deal with her kids, her teenage kids who never see her? And the fact that they're now kind of in danger because of what happens in the rest of the episode. And episode two is much better for me, where there's none of that. The action in episode two, there's a big action set piece in episode two, but it's revolving her house and, like, you know, literally the neighborhood and are there people secretly spying on her? And it's much more riveting. And so I like the show generally. I think it's brilliantly done. Technically, it's incredible, but they just didn't need to have that extensive battle sequence in the first episode. And that is my final verdict on Lioness season three, which is already on Paramount Plus. I think it's going episode by episode, week by week. You can't watch the whole thing yet, but fans of the show will want to catch up with it on Paramount Plus. Also on, Kay, these are shows that were embargoed, which we will be reviewing in the next episode with our great hero, Steph Seelan. Ted Lasso, the new series, Kay?
Yes, very excited about that.
Alley Cat, you've heard Ricky Gervais talking about it. Sterling Point, which is a new teen drama on Prime Video, because Prime Video doesn't have enough teen dramas. there's also on, which we probably won't review, but also on, if you're interested, the second season of 100 Years of Solitude on Netflix, starts on Wednesday, which is the Gael García Márquez adaptation, if you really want to see that. Sterling Point is on Wednesday, the 5th on Prime Video. My Life with the Walter Boys, season 3, that's another teen drama on Netflix, starts on Thursday, the 6th. And finally, and most excitingly for me, The Shards, the Bret Easton Ellis, Ryan Murphy collab is on Disney Plus on Thursday, the 6th of August, but is heavily embargoed. But we will review it as soon as we can. God, I think that's about it, Kate. We've done it. We've been going for nearly an hour and a half, but not quite.
I think it's long enough.
It's definitely long enough. Thank you so much for my co-pilot, Kate, for
managing
to achieve this latest episode of the show, another Dot and Ethel. And we'll be back, though, with Steph Seelan this time next week, where we will be reviewing one or other of The Shards, Ted Lasso, Alley Cats, maybe all of them. See you then. Pilots out.